These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You look at our team, you know, we have a very strong pitching staff, a very strong bullpen, a very strong lineup, and very strong defensively. It's kind of hard to pick one thing we're really weak at. For me to expect anything less than, you know, than going to a World Series I feel like I'm selling us short.
J.D. Martinez, he expects to go to the World Series. So all eyes will be on J.D. Martinez today in Tampa. We got some Celtics on the board, but I do want to get to some Patriots stuff. Odell Beckham's another thing that I want to hit on. You want in on that? If you're the Patriots, Tara Sullivan in the Globe wants in on Odell Beckham. So we'll get to your thoughts on that as well. But why don't we start with some latest rumor mongering from our guy, Greg Bedard.
The guy who doesn't like the clickbait.
He doesn't like clickbait. He doesn't like rumor mongering. He doesn't like rolling in the mud. He's just simply the facts, as his website, the Boston Sports Journal, would tell you. No bull, no bait. He's got some rumor mongering going on.
I'll tell you what, for a guy that gives no bull, no bait, there's a lot of bull and a lot of bait there.
So, he writes, Rob Gronkowski's possible trade market and other final meetings thoughts. So this is final thoughts from the NFL owners meetings as he heads back. He says he tried to dig a little to see where things stand with Gronkowski and where things might go. He says Drew Rosenhaus, Gronkowski's agent, said he didn't have an update. When I told him that all I've heard is he keeps popping into the facility to work out, and that seems to be a good sign, Rosenhaus hesitated for a second, and then again said he doesn't have an update. Bedard writes that I've dealt with Rosenhaus for a long time. I took his second non-answer as, quote, and this is Rob speaking for him, Rob still hasn't given me any direction yet, so I can't say if his working out is a good or a negative sign. Bedard says that Gronkowski contemplating leaving the game has been a serious option. I continue to hear it's not a contract ploy, that the toll it's taken on his body and the pain he endures has become a serious issue. Greg says he asked various front office executives if they've heard if Gronkowski is on the trade block, including those who could have been viewed as Belichick-friendly. All of them said they haven't heard a word on that. Greg writes that a Belichick-friendly source agreed with my thinking that once a player makes Belichick start to contemplate life without him, Belichick starts to warm to being without that player. Quote, he imagines you gone, said this Belichick-friendly source. The longer Gronkowski goes without saying he's all in, the chances of him being traded increases, the source said. Sources from two teams that would make sense for Gronkowski said they absolutely would be interested if Belichick called. Quote, he'd be perfect for us, one said. The likely haul in return, writes Bedard, a possible late first-round pick if the team has it, but more likely, a high second-rounder and a third. In terms of the most likely team to put a deal for Gronkowski on the table, everyone agreed the 49ers would be the ideal trade partner. Listen to this quote. Quote, put him back with Garoppolo, they have nothing at tight end, they have the cap space, and maybe Lynch will overpay to make up for the deal Belichick gave him on Jimmy. One AFC general manager said. Oof.
Oh, yeah, right, because everybody in the league knows that the Niners get the better of that deal.
So maybe Lynch will give him a make good and overpay for Gronkowski. What a quote.
It's twisting the knife.
And the GM said you won't have to worry about Gronk in your conference. Your thoughts?
So, I mean, in terms of the San Francisco part of it, I do think if it ever got to the point where Belichick moved him, there's no way he'd move him in the AFC. Just no way. I mean, way too good, way too impactful a player, still at a, you know, productive point in age in his career, no shot. I don't think it's going to come to that. I think that, I told you, I think ultimately Gronk's going to play for the Patriots.
Would you take a high second and a third for Rob Gronkowski?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, God, Murray, why?
Because he's not, as of right now, he's not dedicated to football. As of right now, I don't know if he actually wants to play or if he wants to go in the WWE or he wants to be an actor. As of right now, he doesn't sound like he's committed to football.
Let me jump in here. Before you say anything, let me jump in. If I'm Brady and they trade Gronk for a second and a third, I retire. I'm out. I'm out.
There's no way they're doing that.
I'm out. I quit right then and there.
No shot.
If they do that for a second and a third, see you later. I retire. You're on your own.
He's too good.
Bye.
Too good.
I'm going to lose Amendola. I'm going to lose my left tackle. And now you're going to trade Gronk for a second and a third when I'm 41? Go to hell. I'm out. I retire. I would. I'd retire on the spot if they did that if I were Brady.
Yeah, but you're the same guy that said you're sick of this Gronk act. And look, this was the most important thing that they needed to handle this offseason. As of right now, it doesn't feel like it's handled. Doesn't feel to me that Gronk's going to be back. And Bernard brought this same thing up when you guys were out, and he said, yeah, he would trade him, and it has to be maybe in his mind like he's already moved on from the player. So if he's not dedicated to the game anymore, and you can actually get a decent return, I think you consider it.
Oh, no, I think Bill would. Definitely. And I keep going back to this. I hate to keep talking in circles or doing this to you, but yes, Bill would do it. Bill would have stuck with Garoppolo. I told you this a year ago as we talked about it. I tried to tell you that Bill doesn't have the final say. And Bill wouldn't have the final say on Gronkowski either. Bill gets the say on, you know, Brandon Bolden and maybe everybody else. He does not get the say on Brady. And if he's not going to have the say on Brady, he's not going to have the say on Gronk.
And so this is why I've said this is the other thing that can potentially force him out before the season starts. If he doesn't have the final say on this player, just like he didn't have the final say on Jimmy Garoppolo, this is a football decision being made over his head. The second time in a year, I'm out. Bye. And what forces that? Tom Brady going to the crafts and saying, fine, I'll rework my deal. This money now needs to be allocated to make sure that Gronk's back in the fold. They go over Bill's head again. Two middle fingers in the air. I'm out. Josh's job. It's his now. Bye.
Yeah. Why would I want to stay and go to another Super Bowl with the greatest quarterback and the greatest tight end to ever play the game?
Because I've lost control of the team.
Yeah.
I thought I was in charge.
And as punishment, I've got to coach Tom Brady to another Super Bowl. He'll live. Just like he's going to live with the Brady thing, he'll live with any other thing like this.
I mean, it is amazing when you really think of it. Like with that nugget from Bedard today, that we are at a stage where Brady and Gronk are leveraging Bill. Like, the two best players on the team.
It's great,
now,
isn't it?
Are now leveraging. Like, did you ever think the Patriots would end up like that? And I say end up or be in a situation like that where their two best players are looking at Belichick and saying, nope, I'm not redoing my contract for Brady. And Gronk saying, I don't know if I'm going to play for you. We'll see. I'll talk to you, tell you what, in July.
Second item. If you think his jilting of the Colts has left Josh McDaniels toxic to owners in the NFL, writes Bedard, you'd be wrong. Biggest reason? If you think this past hiring cycle lacked many good candidates, try to think of one good one for 2019. You can't. And then there's this. McDaniels has kept in touch with the coaches he intended to bring on staff with Indianapolis, and he has not ruled out being a candidate again in 2019. What do you make of that?
I mean, I get a very simple, clear explanation for that one. That's a threat to the Patriots. If Bill doesn't walk at the end of next year like you told me he was going to, then I'm back on the market and I'm out.
You better believe it. Josh has to keep that option open because what if Belichick does pull a Parcells? I'm in. I'm out. I want to stay. I want to go. What if Belichick does do that? Josh has to be protected. He's got to have leverage, and he's smart to do that.
I mean, because unless it's in writing, there's no guarantee. He can't. You know, what's he going to do?
Yeah, no, it's a smart play, but I also think he's maybe overplaying his hand. What team would hire him after he completely screwed over the Colts the way that he did?
His buddies. His buddies. And, you know, some of his buddies have already hired coaches. He has a buddy in Tennessee, hired a Patriot guy. He's a buddy in Detroit, hired a Patriots guy. So, you know, his buddies are getting chewed up, but I think he's still got, you know, there's a few teams around the league I think would still do it. I don't know. It felt to me like his name would be mud after that thing. But if he's got someone he's really close to, and allegedly he was close to the Indy guy, so I don't know, Murray, maybe you're right. All I know is, so look, even if he doesn't really have a team that would hire him, he's got to put the threat out there. He's got to be protected. He's got to have his leverage.
I mean, to me, that's what that is. That's a little warning shot to the Patriots. Like, I agreed. I know you gave me a good deal, et cetera, et cetera. But if Bill starts pulling Parcells' crap, don't think I'm going to sit here with my thumb up my butt and be the offensive coordinator when you bring in some bum quarterback after Tom leaves. No shot.
Okay, item three, and again, you can weigh in at 617-779-0985. We have some Celtics and Red Sox stuff still on the board. We'll get to all of it here after I give you this one. Bedard writes, as the Patriots turn, it's a play for the kids. You think kids know what that means?
No.
I have no idea. As the world turns?
Right, famous soap opera. Yeah.
Old soap opera, as the world turns. According to a source, things still are not completely settled between Belichick, Brady, and Robert Kraft. But the hope is that the meeting, in the words of Robert Kraft, was a good step in the right direction. So, I mean, I continue to believe this as well, that they met, they talked, but nothing's resolved. Nothing's resolved. Other than, you know, Belichick and Kraft presented a united front and were on the same page at the owners' meetings. I mean, which is an easy thing to do. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. It only would have meant something if they weren't on the same page at the owners' meetings. Then you'd look at it and go, whoa. You guys had 2 months to get your story straight, and you're still, like, so they passed that step. I mean, so they're to that point. But has everything been hammered out? I mean, Brady's contract still hasn't been redone.
Let me know when Brady's contract gets redone, and then I'll start to believe it.
And Curran wrote something like this again this week that was, you know, on this. I think Curran's been good on this stuff as well. Curran wrote that Belichick and Kraft and their comments left plenty of room for interpretation. Curran talks about, you know, the Kraft comment. We had the meeting. But then in the next breath, writes Curran, Kraft tamped down expectations that the meeting was particularly noteworthy. Because Kraft did. He said, yeah, we had the meeting. But just to be clear, we have meetings all the time, Kraft said. You know, we're not a public organization. We don't have board meetings. Da-da-da. So on the one hand, he says they met. But then on the other hand, he says, well, but we meet all the time. It's not a big deal. So which is it? Curran says, you know, what the, Kraft's comment that the residual of this loss was really hard on everyone, meaning the Super Bowl. But I sort of see that as a high-class problem because I sat in the stands when we never made the playoffs for 20-odd years. And Curran writes that the aim, obviously, was to make it seem like Belichick and Brady are in lockstep and in frequent communication. But Brady's discomfort was not tied to anything but the loss to Philly, Kraft infers. But it wasn't just the Super Bowl, Tom says. Allusions to 2017 being a particularly hard season for Brady were present long before the team ever left for Minnesota. So, you know, again, Kraft keeps talking about the loss and people talking to soon after the loss. Brady's issue with Belichick goes well before that loss.
Well, and even before the game, Kraft himself talked about people keeping
tension.
And their egos being in check and things like that. And Giselle said in the Tom versus Time, the last couple of years have been hard on him. So now, look, I think it was more 2017 than 2016, but nonetheless, this goes back more than, you know, I don't think it's just about the game. The game makes it harder, though, that's for sure.
So Tom just worries about the communication. Yeah, they've met, but if the communications line, if the communication lines were wide open, he says, and working, wouldn't Brady's future plans have been more defined rather than now seeming up in the air? If Brady was feeling ambivalent and the Patriots traded Jimmy Garoppolo anyway, that would seem risky. No kidding. He says, was a revised retirement timetable discussed since Brady has seemingly pulled back from his pledge to play until 45 and is now season to season, according to his filmmaker? Hell, says Curran, if communication lines were open and working, Josh McDaniels would not have had to wait until after the Super Bowl when he had his bags packed for Indianapolis before finding out the Patriots really, really wanted him to stick around.
That's a great point.
How good can the communication be where they had to, you know, turn back the private jets as he was about to step on it?
No, it's a great point. Yeah, I mean, because that McDaniels thing was an 11th hour, you know, I say agreement or deal. He was gone, man. They announced him, for crying out loud.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Where do you think the fault lines still lie in the rift between those guys?
I think it starts with Guerrero. I think that's sort of a bargaining point. Is Tom going to do his deal? Is he going to get his guy back? I think the whole Guerrero thing goes to, is he appreciated, would work? Like, you know, I've been doing this for like 20 years. Can I at least get my guy in the building? Like, can I have that, please? And so I think that's sort of where it starts. So if they can find common ground on that, then I think the ball starts to roll positively down the hill.
So that Celtics, Red Sox, right to it, as promised. Jason in Brockton. Go ahead, Jason. And that was Bedard on with us yesterday, by the way. Go ahead, Jason.
Felger, for a long time we've been trying to figure out why the Patriots, Bill Belichick, traded Jimmy Garoppolo to the 49ers for a second-round pick only. What if Belichick had a handshake deal in place with Lynch to trade Brady for a first-round pick and Kraft nixed that deal? So therefore, because Belichick had that handshake deal in place with Lynch, he had no choice but to send him Garoppolo for just a second-round pick. It makes sense to me that he wanted to trade Brady. He was so tired of the whole Guerrero situation. He was ready to move on from the 41-year-old quarterback and put the kid in place. So, you know, he made the deal. Let's send Brady back to his hometown, San Francisco, get a first-round pick in return. Kraft says no. Yes.
I'd say, you know, and thank you for the call. Who the hell knows what happened? I mean, I don't think that's it. I want to say that sounds silly, but the whole thing's been silly. So who the heck knows? Bill wanted to coach Garoppolo. And if it was put before him that you can only have one, Bill would have chosen Garoppolo. This is why the owner stepped in. So I don't think it's insane to say that Belichick would have traded Tom Brady. I think if it was put before him like that, he would have.
So I thought he was going somewhere else at the beginning of the call. I can't imagine that Belichick ever believed, though, that Kraft would let him trade Brady. Right? So to me, there was, or at least not, you know, not at that point. And so given the way Brady was playing, I wonder if there was some other element in there.
Belichick thought he could franchise him.
Something like that. It might not even have been that. I mean, I don't know what else other options there are.
Belichick was under the delusion that Jimmy would sign a bridge deal.
Right, or that, you know, he'd have the money. Who knows? But I can't believe that Belichick ever sat there at one point and said, oh, yeah, he's going to let me trade Brady, no problem.
Mike in Worcester on the Seas. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, what do you got?
Second time calling. I just want to have a little moment of appreciation for all the Boston sports thing. We got Bruins. We got a good coach. We got a young team. The Red Sox, I think it goes down to Bogart as far as how he's playing. It seems like we always talk about him. Football's a drama. And the Celtics are doing good, and hopefully we can go deep into the playoffs and have Kyrie back. So let Cleveland and Toronto bash each other's head in.
It's a great time. It's a great time. It's a great town. It's a great place to do what we do.
I mean, it really is when you think about it. All four of them are pretty much firing on close to all cylinders.
Talk crap on all four of them. It's beautiful.
I mean, the Bruins have made a great run. The Celtics are totally legit now. The Red Sox, for all the bashing we do, they are a good team. We just, again, they're just not great. We need to find out if they can get to great. And the Patriots goes without saying. I mean, they're all good. All four of them.
I usually find we always have material. I mean, I don't know what, call me crazy. Matt in Raynham on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, guys, no pleasantries. Don't really care how you guys are doing. Just want to get to my sports talk. Big Jim worry. You speak for a nation out there. Every time you worry about the littlest things, there's a cult following who feels the exact same way. Keep on keeping on with that. The real reason I called Felger is I have the way that we can get the Red Sox to go to the World Series or at least get really far. At the end of this weekend's series in Tampa Bay, what you need to do on Monday is come on the radio loud and clear and declare the season is over.
Yep.
Declare that they're done and declare that they're done because they don't have the youth or the talent or anything else. That will get them motivated. They'll go to the World Series based on that.
Too young. Too young. Something like that. But it is a question. What is it going to take for people to latch on? I mean, Sale didn't move the needle last year, and he was good. He was pretty much as advertised from day one. Didn't move the needle. They were a first-place team, almost wire-to-wire. Didn't move the needle. Some young guys took a step back, but it was still a good young team. Didn't move the needle. So what's it going to...
They're going to have to win a playoff series. I mean, the hardcores are going to be there.
So this is what I'm saying.
Like, oh, yeah, no. We're months and months away from the casual fan, I think, giving a rat's ass about the Red Sox this year.
So this is a... You know, this is like the cliche of all cliches, but do you believe in the, you know, quote-unquote it factor?
Yes, I do, for sure.
Okay, so do I. Okay, so do I. There are teams that you watch, like Murray, you and the Bruins now.
Right.
They have it, right? You believe they have it. Like, there's something there. And it's hard to quantify. It's hard to, you know, or it's no tangible.
It's a feel. Once you go to a home game, I mean, you're like, oh, it's just a little bit different.
Okay, right? So if they can give us that feel, then I think the regular season can be a success. Because there's no way they're going to convince us of the playoff thing until October. Like, obviously, you can't jump them ahead 6 months in time. To me, there's got to be an intangible there. There's got to be some sort of vibe that comes out of that team. They go, this feels different. Feels different. And I don't know if that's dramatic wins, a bench-clearing brawl. I don't know what it is. But we'll know it when we see it.
You might be onto something with a little bit of that dirtiness. If something happened in that first series with the Yankees in a few weeks, that could bring people in. If there was a brush back, you know, maybe some John back and forth, well, that felt like it was the late 90s, early aughts again.
Sure.
That would bring people in.
And certainly something that involved Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton.
Knock him on his ass!
The real stars of that series. I mean, that's, yeah. So let's see.
Look, you know how I feel about Stanton. I mean, if I could absorb someone's body as mine, I would take his, that guy. That guy's Adonis, as far as I'm concerned.
Hunter in Vermont on the Seas. Hi, Hunter.
Hi. This is hypothetically thinking, but there's a couple trades I got that I think you guys, I don't know, for the Celtics. Would you trade, like, Kyrie for Damian Lillard or Shabazz Napier and Myers Leonard for, like...
Okay, I can't give... I can't do... I'm not doing that one.
I'm not trading Kyrie for anybody.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, unless you want to give me, like, you know, I'm not trading for anybody. I'm not. Because the whole idea is to put him with someone. So I was going to say maybe Anthony Davis, you know. But no, I want him with Anthony Davis. That's what I want. I'm not trading Kyrie. No chance.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5.
The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Okay, Greg, there's a story today that Rob Gronkowski is actually going to be in a movie with Mel Gibson, I believe. Is there any additional clarity on the Gronk situation? And do you expect the Patriots to draft a tight end?
There is not clarity. I saw Drew Rosenhaus at the league meetings yesterday. I asked him, I said, do you have any update on your tight end? He said, I do not. And I said, all I hear is that he's at the facility working out. And he's like, I can't even comment on that. But I appreciate you asking the question. So from what I hear down here, and I'm going to write about this more on my site because I sort of went around and I gauged, is there a trade market? Is it possible? That sort of thing. You know, from what I hear, he's not on the market at this time. And as far as them drafting a tight end, I would think that would happen. But, you know, who knows? We'll have to see the way the draft board falls.
You know, he's definitely not in this camp of he's coming back. It's just a contract ploy, you know. Bedard's talking about trade market, drafting a guy, et cetera, et cetera. Bedard's clearly of the mind that this is still not over with Gronkowski.
And he's been that way from the beginning, too. At no point did he ever say, you know, I think he said at the very, very beginning, his instinct was that it's a contract ploy, but then, you know, he asked some questions and he went the other way fast.
Okay, so we got this. We got the continuing Garoppolo-Brady thing on the table. You want Odell Beckham. You want Johnny Manziel. Again, some Johnny Manziel stuff that I found interesting today as well. We'll get to all of that. Mixing in your Red Sox thoughts and Celtics thoughts. Pete Nesek on the Red Sox opener today. Go ahead, Pete.
Do you think any of the lack of passion has to do with the manager? And I'm not trying to blame him for anything, but don't you think that, you know, a team comes with a spark. Like, look at the fun we had with the insanity of Bobby Valentine. I mean, you turned on the TV to see what would happen next. And it seems the pattern of the passion dwindling kind of went year to year as Farrell kept going. And Farrell was the man who would describe a slide as, you know, the moment the runner gained enough speed to take a horizontal position and still move in a forward motion towards the intended base. I mean, you know,
I don't know. Pete, you tell me, did it impact your interest in the team?
I wonder him a little bit, but I wonder if it goes to the players is what I'm getting at.
I see.
You know?
Yeah, they all took on his personality.
Well, you know, like, how many times do you hear someone say, a team takes on the identity of its coach?
Yeah.
Okay. And I think there's some truth to that, but the way I would phrase it is you take on the identity of your most dominant personality, particularly in baseball, because the clubhouse personality is more important. So who was the most dominant personality of 2017? I would say David Price.
Yeah, definitely.
And his negativity. So that's why they became who they became. Because he was the most dominating personality. So to me, if you talk about leadership, like, it speaks to the identity of the team. I would like to see them be the kind of team that has Eduardo Nunez's personality, right? Willing to bunt on CC Sabathia and say, hey, too bad, you can't fill your position because you're a fat dump. That's your problem. Like, I'd rather that. I'd like to see more of that. And I feel like the young guys are too nice to let that part of their personality out.
So to me, one of the great misconceptions on my part and misses on my part is that I thought Pedroia would pick up from Ortiz. You know, that Pedroia really has that on-field persona that we want, that people gravitate to, that is infectious, and that, you know, I thought it would have gone right to him, and it didn't. You know, he's just not that guy. And I, you know, that surprises me because I thought it would have been his team after Ortiz left, and they'd take on his personality, and they didn't even do that. Here's Amin in the car on the Celts. Go ahead, Amin.
Hey, like always, thanks for taking my call. Listen, I don't want to say that, you know, our bench, Ogilvy, Baines, X, Y, and Z, is kind of hyped them up like the way we Celtics fans do, like in past years.
Thank you.
But Felger, but for you to say that the bench doesn't really mean much in the playoffs is, I think it's kind of stretching it a bit too far. I mean, In 08, when we won the championship, our bench was huge for us. And they contributed a lot. And the way that these guys have been playing for the past, like, 10 games, and overall as a grade this season, you know, I think, you know, it's going to help us a lot in the
okay, Amin, I think that those guys flash and go away. It was P.J. Brown hit a massive shot in one of those games. Leon Poe had a massive game at home against the Lakers, and then you never hear from him. And I'm telling you, if it wasn't going to be Leon Poe, it would have been someone else. It would have been Harry Schmedlap. It would have been Ronald Fenefesi from the bottom of the bench. He would have flashed for a game, and you never would have heard from him again. It was nothing special or particular about this player or that. That's what those role guys do. So,
I mean, the contributions can help, but ultimately it comes down to your starting five and whether or not you have legitimate superstars.
Just look at the minutes. You don't go 8-9 deep in the postseason. If you do, it's stupid. So,
or it's a blowout.
Or it's a blowout. Right. So you rely on those guys. Those guys get the shots on balance, and that's the way it's going to be. It's going to be talk about Horford. Don't talk about Semi Ojeleye. Like, that's a guy that's going to have to score in the postseason. I asked who your third scorer was, just sort of assuming Horford's the second guy, but he's not. Horford's going to have to be the third guy. He's going to have to be in there. Focus on that. That's what they're going to need, not Daniel Theis. Like, just think about the guys who are going to be on the floor to start and end these games.
I mean, if you really go back to that 08 season, I think you'd be surprised at how many minutes the bench guys played in the playoffs. Posey played a lot. Okay, Posey was a valuable piece. Every team's going to have, you got to go 6, 7, maybe 8 deep, right? But other than that, those 9 and 10 guys, go to hell. I don't want you in the game. In a big one, forget it. Grab some pine, hold on to a towel, and hoop it up every now and then. That's all I want to see.
Brandon in Leominster. Hi, Brandon.
Hello. I just had a quick question about Brady and Belichick. I just don't understand, if they're button heads so much and they're causing all this friction, why are either of them afraid to leave each other? Do you think that they'll be unsuccessful apart? Do you think that Belichick will be exposed because Brady handles a lot of the time clock, but, like, on his own discretion? Or do you think Brady will fall apart because he won't have the system to fall back on?
And that's also a good question. Brandon, stop there, because that's a good question. If it's so bad in there, why isn't Brady saying, screw it, I want out, send me so-and-so? Or why isn't Bill, you know, forcing his way out and taking the Giants job? If it's so bad, why hasn't that happened? I mean, I have an answer.
Well, because they're so good together in the football operation.
It's not just that.
Well, I mean, Tom obviously has loyalty to the Crafts. I think that's part of it.
This is a good place. They can still win without each other, they think. They don't want to go somewhere. They want the other guy to get the hell out, because they think they can continue the winning thing here because it's about them. You know, that's what it's about. It's not about proving themselves somewhere else. It's about letting that guy get out of here, and I'll show you I can do it without him here. And why would you want to start over somewhere else when you know it can work here? So if one of them leaves, Belichick or Brady, they're still in the AFC title game. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know if they're winning, or I don't know if they're not as good, obviously.
Well, wait a minute. If Tom leaves, they're in the AFC title game with Brian Hoyer?
No, if Garoppolo were still here.
Oh, right, okay.
That would be true.
I think at least you're in that divisional game, probably at home, because you're winning your division. So all that means is beating out the crappy team in the AFC for that second seed, and you're at home in the tomato can game. I think they win that with Brady, with Belichick and Garoppolo, and then we'll see. So I'm not telling you you're as good with one of those guys gone. But if you're asking me how come one of those guys doesn't want to bolt, it's because they'd rather kick the other guy out and stay. That's what they would both want.
Oh, Brady definitely thinks he can win with Josh. I don't think there's any question
about that.
And
Belichick definitely believes he can win with another quarterback.
Well, when he had Garoppolo, yeah. I don't think he thinks he can win with Brian Hoyer.
No, maybe not. Yeah. There are limits to that.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Several teams, I'm told, checked in with the Giants as far as, like, would you possibly really deal him? So they'll have an idea for what they could maybe get in. And Beckham has received the message as well. He'll probably have to make some decisions as well going forward. His behavior, how he's going to act, where he stands from the Giants. And you know, you talk about possible market. It would have to be at least a first-round pick, likely first-round pick plus, to trade him. And even then, we don't know if the Giants would really do it.
Tara Sullivan in the Boston Globe does. She says that Odell Beckham might or might not be on the trading block. But if there's a sliver of daylight in the doorway, here's a thought for the Patriots and Bill Belichick. Go ahead and push it open. Find out what it would take to land Beckham. And if the price is right, make an offer. Then line up the 25-year-old wide receiver alongside Tom Brady and wait for the magic to happen. Because make no mistake, Beckham is magic. On the field, he is a rare talent, a generational player who causes more than his share of off-field headaches, but whose transcendent ability is undeniable. You want Odell Beckham on the team?
Oh, man, I want him. I'd take him. I told you. I don't want him with Brandon Cooks, but I would get rid of Cooks and take Beckham. That's what I would do.
Would you trade Cooks and a first-round pick for Odell Beckham?
No, not the first-rounder with it, no.
Would you trade Cooks and a second-round pick for Beckham?
No, and I'll tell you why. I think they both have the same contract. I think it's
Beckham's right up now, yeah, at the end of this year. I think
right.
He's on that rookie option.
Right. So, and I think the number's identical.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Right? So I would say Cooks for Beckham. We'll give you a mid-round pick in addition, maybe a fourth.
Why would the Giants ever do that?
Because they don't want Beckham, and this way they have the option of keeping Cooks.
Yeah, no. But, I mean, they'll get a first-round pick elsewhere.
Even though I...
You think?
Yeah.
Even though
I don't.
I'm a big believer in talent trumping trouble, I'm a hard no on this guy. Too much of a diva, too much about everything that I don't like about diva wide receivers and headcase wide receivers in the league. I think he wants to be famous more for, like, Kardashian-type stuff than he does as an NFL player. He just... Yeah, he's infinitely talented, but I'm good. He's too much of a head case.
Okay, straight up, who would you rather have, Beckham or Brandon Cook?
Beckham.
Beckham.
Cook. And for the reasons you said, it's like this continually, like this always blows me away. Whenever we get to an offseason and there's a big name wide receiver who's available out there, fans want to go get him. And imagine putting that guy with Tom Brady. Imagine that guy next to Tom Brady. Tara Sullivan does it today. Imagine that guy with Tom Brady. How much better is he really going to be? I put Danny Amendola next to Tom Brady, and he's going to win the MVP, and they're going to score the second most points in the league and go to the Super Bowl. Well, why do you need...
Yeah, but you're posing this question just as talent. It's Beckham, because I think Cooks kind of sucks.
No, I'm not telling you that Beckham's clearly a better player than Cooks. Definitely.
They don't need him.
Definitely. But why does everyone get... Oh, my God, the speed! He takes the top off the defense! Spectacular playmaker! Yeah, I know all that. Chris Hogan isn't really any of those things, but... When Tom Brady plays with Chris Hogan, they score the second most points in the league and they go to the Super Bowl. So why are you always chasing the next Randy Moss? Like, I don't get it.
It's the wow factor. That's always going to happen with a lot of people.
Well, it's only been 18 years where it's been proven that you can score just as many points, win just as many games with Deion Branch, Wes Welker, Troy Brown, Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Malcolm Mitchell, Brandon Cooks as you can with Randy Moss. So why do you all want the next Randy Moss? It makes no sense to me.
Okay, so I don't always want the next Randy Moss, and I know you're speaking in generalities there. I'm just telling you, Cooks or Beckham, I'll take Odell Beckham. I can't stand Cooks the more I watch him. I was so disappointed there.
He's going to be better next year.
There was one game where I thought Cooks was going to pan out. One game, and now I can't remember whether it was Houston.
He was good in the AFC title game.
Okay, but early in the year, it was either the Houston game or the Carolina game where he scored a touchdown on an in cut and then just beat everybody down the field. And had they done more, that's the guy I thought they were getting.
Okay, so that's item number one.
The thing with Odell Beckham Jr., he just strikes me as the type of guy that could finish a game with 11 catches, a buck 50, and a touchdown, and they could lose 28, you know, to whatever, you know, 28-7, and it doesn't matter to
him.
And
he's not all that upset about it.
Yeah,
exactly
like,
right.
That's what bugs me about him.
Don't need it. Don't need it. If we had a kind of quarterback or a system that said you need that kind of receiver for your quarterback to feed because your quarterback's better with that kind of receiver, I'd say fine, then you got to do it. It's only been 18 years where Brady has proven that he can throw to a solid group of guys that just get open and catch the ball, and that's all you need to score a billion points and win championships. So why do you need that receiver? It just every time it blows me away. So again, 617-779-0985. I still have this giveaway to give you here coming up in just a few minutes. Item number two, there's a new tackling rule, which isn't quite right. There's a new lowering the head rule in the NFL that Murray hates, and why, Murray?
Because now I have to concede to you that running backs are truly going to be irrelevant in the NFL.
First of all, what's the rule?
The rule is this. It's a foul if a player lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. The penalty's this. Loss of 15 yards, fouls by the defense, it's on automatic first down. But here's what I say with why the running back is ultimately going to be irrelevant. Congratulations, you win.
I've already won.
But now, because the...
Who thinks the running back
is relevant? All in the matter of player safety, which anytime you hear that is just the dog whistle for we're watering down the game because of the lawyers and the nerd doctors. But just think of this. If this goes through, and it sounds like it's going to, it's 4th-and-1. They hand it off to a running back. The running back puts his head down to try to pick up the first down. Out comes the flag, and now it's 4th-and-16. So this is the way this reads. You can't put your head down. Oh, but you got to lead with your shoulder. How do you lead with your shoulder? You lead with your head. It makes no sense to me. I liked any of the other rules changes that they've made, including the catch rule. But this thing that just slipped in last minute, It's just more of them trying to water down the game and turn it into something that it's not. And it's going to make running backs essentially irrelevant if it plays out the way that it sounds like it's going to.
I mean, I do want to see how all this works. Like, and I don't know, does that, like, I wonder on some level, Murray, does it make the footwork of the running back more important? You see what I mean? In other words, a lot of guys who just put their head down and barrel in, hell, LeGarrette Blount can do that. But do you actually have to now have some skill back there to be able to score at the 1 yard line?
So, if they approach it in a common sense fashion, it shouldn't be a big deal. Now, I don't trust them to approach it in a common sense fashion. I mean, there's a difference between a running back on a quarterback sneak or a fourth and one play where the running back just puts his head down and leads with his head versus using your head as a battering ram or, you know, headbutting or really getting in there and ramming a guy. Like, there's a difference there.
Yeah, but I still think the way that this reads, it's too open to urban interpretation.
Well, let me tell you this. So this is my problem. I don't get why they don't just make these things something that you look at on film during the week and find the guys. I don't want it to be an in-game thing, right? The game's going a million miles an hour. They got a million things to think of. And now they got to tell me whether the guy's ramming his head or he just has his head down in real time. You're not going to be able to do it properly. And I sure as hell don't want you going to replay in the middle of the game and mucking up the game even more. So let it go. Get to the middle of the week when you've got six effing days between games and look at the film and send out your fines for your dangerous hits, your lowering the head, the head shots, and da-da-da. Don't leave it for the game officials. The goal is to get it out of the game, right? So find these guys until you take it out of the game and do it during the week when you have all the film to really look at it and see who did it and who didn't do it. Don't do it during the game. That's my only thing.
Yeah, when they change rules like this in the NFL, this is where I truly become. It's the one thing that makes me the ugly American, and I start like wanting to rail against the PC police and people like that. And you know, like, why are you going to change things? This makes me crazy because the way that it reads, and some of the response from players in the league, one of which was Derek Carr, who even tweeted like, well, "What the hell am I supposed to do on a QB sneak?"
QB sneak.
It's you're asking these players to fundamentally change the way that they've grown up playing the game. You're changing you're completely changing football.
Okay. That's on the board. We'll get to Johnny Manziel and some new information today that I did not know. Maybe you all did. I didn't. And it really does tie to Belichick, Brady, Garoppolo. It all ties in. And I'll tell you what I'm talking about after I tell you that caller 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985 will score a Bruins prize pack, including an official game puck, hat, T-shirt, and more, courtesy of the Boston Bruins and Star Market. 90 seconds, real quick, no commercial, then right back for the Manziel stuff.
Felger and Mazz, the Sports Hub.